Moeller Program, your place for intelligent Christian conversation about the issues that matter. Dr. Moeller is president of the Southern Baptist Theological Seminary and one of the nation's leading theologians and cultural commentators. To get online with Dr. Moeller, call toll-free nationwide, 1-877-893-TALK. That's 1-877-893-8255. Now, here's your host, Dr. Albert Moeller.
Hello, America. Welcome to the Albert Moeller Program. Well, March Madness is here, and a lot of folks right now are glued to television sets and computer screens. This is the first time that NCAA, NCAA as they prefer to be called, has allowed the computer internet broadcasting of all of these games, and there are people who are supposed to be working right now. They're supposed to be taking care of your bank account and your insurance policy and studying for tests and all the rest. And they're looking like they're so intently at work at their computer. And, folks, they're listening and watching basketball games. How big an issue is sport? I mean, really, in our lives, how should we as Christians think about this? To what degree should we be involved in sports? How should we valorize sports? How much of our percentage of life should we give to sports? We're going to have a very special guest, and it's... I can just tell you, when you hear this name, you're going to know this is going to be fun. Our guest for the program today is going to be C.J. Mahaney, and a longtime friend of this program, and he is an absolutely fanatical fan who is, more than that, a fanatically devoted follower of the Lord Jesus Christ. And we're going to be talking about how you put all that together. He's also going to talk to us based upon some articles that he's written on the website that we share at Together for the Gospel. He's writing about how he is helping his own son, just about to turn 13, to think about these issues. It's going to be a lot of fun, and I think it could really be informative for a lot of parents, especially a lot of dads and moms out there wondering with their sons, you know, how much of life should be taken up this way. Obviously, it's an increasing issue for some girls, too, with all kinds of athletics, but there are an awful lot of guys out there for whom sport appears right now to be everything. And we're going to talk about how much of anything it should be. First, a review of some issues in the news, and you'll remember that we earlier this week dealt with this news article, a massive essay, in the New York Times Magazine by Elizabeth Weil. And she was writing about wrongful birth and wrongful life claims. I also made this whole topic the subject of my extensive commentary published on Monday morning at albertmoeller.com. We had a very, very interesting conversation on this program about that, and you can hear the entire rebroadcast. Just by going, you can get podcast or MP3, however, by going to the website. But today, on NPR's Fresh Air with Terry Gross, the author of the article, Elizabeth Weil, appeared, and what she had to say there kind of goes beyond the article, and it is really interesting to hear what she had to say about the whole issue, and in her own words. Here's Elizabeth Weil writing in the New York Times Magazine and talking today on NPR's Fresh Air.
What are the larger issues you think this case and similar cases raise?
It raises a lot of very complicated issues for us. The major one is, should we be able to decide to terminate a specific pregnancy, and on what grounds? And by that I mean, these days a pregnant woman is offered many genetic tests and for all sorts of diseases. And many, many more genetic tests are possible and on the horizon. And which of those tests should be actionable? Should a mother be able to decide that she doesn't want to give birth to a baby who will get a disease like Huntington's later in life? Should a mother decide she doesn't want to give birth to a baby who would be blind?
Well, those are certainly interesting questions and no longer hypothetical. You're talking about tests that, at least in terms of probabilities, are available even now. But there are some really interesting aspects to what Elizabeth Weil had to say here. First of all, she and her husband made the decision to abort a child who was revealed by testing prenatally to have the likelihood of a very significant genetic disease. And we're going to get to her words about that in just a moment. And by the way, just remember, this is her conversation with Terry Gross today on Fresh Air with NPR. But she had a lot more to say about this. Just in the statement we just heard, she said, which of those tests should be actionable? Now, that's kind of a bureaucratic, analytical way of saying, which lives are we not going to accept? If we get the data that says this baby is going to be blind, is that a justification for aborting, killing the baby? If it's Huntington's disease, blue eyes, wrong gender, there are no rules right now. And she obviously is troubled by the fact that there are no rules. And I certainly am troubled with her in that regard. But where do you go from here? That's what's very, very interesting. When she spoke about her own experience, clip number four, guys, she really spoke about how they made this decision.
You know, I can't say that there was one moment when it became clear that we were going to terminate the pregnancy. It was just something that I think came to feel like the right thing to both of us slowly, though very painfully.
Yeah, I don't discount for a moment the fact that it was a painful decision. Painful in what ways? I'm not sure. She would have to tell us that. She did say some things that we're going to hear in just a moment that made it clear it wasn't as ethically painful as I might have thought it might have been. But I want to go back to the question she asked. She said in that first clip, which of these tests should be actionable? Which she means, which one of these problems, which is shown by probability or by testing, through testing to be present, which one of these means that we should abort the baby? That obviously assumes that at least some of them would mean that. I mean, let's be real honest here. That is something we have to just face squarely. She obviously believes that the answer to that is that at least some of these tests would produce some diagnoses that would be, in her mind, actionable, morally right to abort the child. And it's not hypothetical for her because she and her husband made that decision. And she says they did, well, let's just use her words. It was just something that came to feel like the right thing to do to both of us slowly, though very painfully. Looking back at this, there's a rather long clip here we need to hear. She talks about this. And this is when she looks back on the situation in a moral frame. Let's listen to what she has to say.
You know, I fear I'm going to sound like a terrible person, but I didn't. I had lots of fears of feeling endless sadness about the decision, but I didn't feel it was unethical. I guess I very, very much believe that these are decisions to be made by families, and that the fetus I was carrying was not yet a person with the same rights and privileges that I had or my husband had. At that point, we also had a 2-year-old daughter. And I had very big fears about what bringing that baby into the world would mean for the rest of my family.
It's hard to hear that. It is for me. I imagine for most of you, it's just very hard to hear those words. And to hear a mother say, we decided that it was the right thing to do to kill this baby, to abort this pregnancy, to use the language that she herself used earlier, this was a test that evidently in her mind was actionable. But she says here that these decisions are to be made by families individually. You know, earlier she called for guidelines. And now it appears that the only guideline she really wants is one that's utter subjectivity. The utter subjectivity with which she made her decision, she and her husband together, to abort a pregnancy on the basis of a genetic test. Folks, this is where an awful lot of medical decisions, life and death decisions, are being made right now. I wanted you to hear that language. I wanted you to hear Elizabeth Weil's voice in order to understand that this is something that people are deciding right now. This is not the brave new world of some abstract future out there indefinitely, years to come. This is right now. People are making these decisions, life and death, right now. And where are we, where we're supposed to be present, to speak to these issues and to contend for life at every stage? I wonder, I seriously wonder, if this woman, who has now spoken with such an articulate voice about her own experience here, I mean, she's given us the evidence right here. I mean, she's just told us her story. She's just told us how she decided with her husband that they were going to terminate this pregnancy. And she's just said in answer to Terry Gross's question about how she felt about this, she said, I don't feel like a terrible person. I had lots of fears of feeling endless sadness about the decision, but I didn't feel it was unethical. That's the key phrase right there, isn't it? I didn't feel that it was unethical. Well, on what basis would she then believe that it was unethical? What would it take? You see, I wonder if she talked to her neighbors, what advice would they have given? If she talked to her family members, what advice would they have given? What if she had talked to you? What if this is someone that you know who is presented with this awful and frightening and traumatic genetic or other form of prenatal diagnosis? What when someone you know, what happens when they hear this word, this diagnosis? Are you going to be there to say, this is still life? This is still a life to be received with joy and gratitude? This is still a human being made in the image of God? There are no tests, to use her language, that are actionable when the action is death. Thanks for hearing that with me. I hope those words resound in your memory for a very long time. Let's be ready with an answer. I'll be right back. Well, we're in March, and it is March Madness, and millions of Americans are now looking at the festival they've been waiting for, and that is the big dance, the NCAA Men's Basketball Tournament. And right now, in one of the regional contests, Winthrop University is tied with Tennessee with just seconds of the game and overtime. It's a mess because Tennessee was a relatively highly seeded team, as would be true at this point, number two. And this is an embarrassment, if nothing else. And there are some people right now whose careers are riding on this. Out there on the floor are 10 young men whose lives appear to have come to the culmination right now of this game. And for many, many people, sports in general, athletics, even now basketball in particular, is the one singular focus of their lives. One of the big questions, I think, for us is the place that sports should have, athletics should have. Sports fanaticism ought to have in the life of a Christian. There's something that is inherently good in this. We can taste it, can't we? We can feel it. There is the drive for excellence. There is the excitement, the camaraderie, the teamwork, and just all kinds of good things. There's the masculinity for men of sport and all the rest. And yet also there is there's something of a lack of balance here. We have worries about corruption. We talked about Barry Bonds and steroids having to do with Major League Baseball earlier. And you have lives that are just so singularly focused on this. You have families right now. If they've got three kids, they're on 10 teams. And their family life is spread just to everywhere, getting all the kids to the right games. You have kids, and especially young men, who have staked their future on an athletic career that may or may not happen, and in all likelihood isn't going to happen. And then you have... And I saw this in the son of a friend just last year. You have a kid who plays his last high school football game, and he didn't get any invitation to play at the college level, and he thinks the greatest time of his life is now over. Something's wrong with that. My guest today is C.J. Mahaney, for many years pastor of the Covenant Life Church in Gaithersburg, Maryland. Just one of my favorite guests on this program, one of my dearest friends. He is now the head of Sovereign Grace Ministries. He's also the father of a 12, about to turn 13-year-old son, who is also both an athlete and a sports fan. I have learned so much about sports from C.J. It is C.J. that got me to read John Feinstein's book, The Last Dance, that got me excited about this whole thing. I even wrote my commentary about it. It's found on my website right now. CJ, you're to blame for all this.
Al, what a joy. I mean, I am so honored to be on your show, and I would argue that this marks an historic day in the Albert Mohler program. I'm thinking that your audience is stunned, absolutely stunned.
I'm thinking that I'm stunned, CJ.
Sports of all topics. And for me, my friend, this would be an answer to prayer. I think you remember the last time I had the privilege to be on your show. I appealed to you to please turn your world-class discernment to this particular topic. And I'm grateful that you have heard my appeal and that my prayer has been answered.
Well, if I can encourage you that way, CJ, it's the least I can do. I just have to come back and say, you know, you really have convinced me. I mean this just as seriously as I can. You really have convinced me that that sports can be very much a part of a Christian's life and it not get out of balance.
Indeed. Although, first, let me just say, was it okay? I told Matt, who is responsible to screen calls for your show, that he must interrupt us with score updates so that we can know who won the Winthrop-Tennessee game in particular. and any other games that are concluding during the broadcast? Was that okay to do that?
It's okay. With 4 seconds left, it's 63-61 Tennessee.
Okay.
Okay.
Very
it's not. It just rang the buzzer. Tennessee just won.
Well,
okay. And I love being in control of my own program.
Well, discerning fans know, even though I love Tennessee and love a particular church in Knoxville, Tennessee, that Tennessee shouldn't have been a number two seed. Listen, I've got a question for you, Al. I've got a question for you. Have you filled out your brackets?
I have.
Okay, very good. So before the show concludes, you will announce publicly who you got winning this tournament, right?
I'm going to give the final four and who I picked to win.
Excellent. I will do the same.
And let me tell you, CJ, if that bears any resemblance to what happens at the end, you're going to know that it had to be a word from on high.
So that would maybe challenge a cessationist position?
Well, I'm not going that far. But I'm not going that far. But, you know, at our blog we do together, at Together for the Gospel, you've done a really good job of outlining how you, with Chad, your son, he's just about to turn 13, how you're really trying to help him to put sports in perspective. Can you set some of that out for us?
Well, I hope so. I will certainly make the attempt. For me, growing up, participating in sports, playing in sports was, sadly and to my shame, a means of self-exaltation. And I want my son, when he plays and participates in sports, to glorify God and not himself. I want his participation in sports to be distinctively Christian and for ultimately the purpose of glorifying God. So I give great care and attention to his soul in both preparing him prior to practice or prior to a game and in reviewing the game after the game and accenting biblical priorities rather than celebrating cultural priorities.
Well, I think that is so well said. And what you're talking about here goes beyond at the end of the game, if you won, saying, I give all the glory to God. It's also in how you play the game and approach the game, isn't it?
Absolutely. Well, I think participation in sports should be a means of growth in godliness, ultimately for the glory of God. So I think the accent on participation should be growth in godly character. I think that's what it ultimately should be about.
Okay, so I was the nearsighted kid with the thick glasses that got picked last, CJ. So, I mean, what role should this play in my life?
Well, I think properly understood, it should be a means of you growing in humility.
Well, that's settled, CJ. That was settled when I was six. So let's move on from humility.
Well, I mean, have you revealed to your audience the instrument that you played in a high school band?
Now, how do we get on that?
Well, because I think that's the kind of information that your audience wants to know, Al. And I think I'm really here to represent your audience and ask the kind of questions that everyone wants to know. You got a loyal audience.
Nobody wanted to know that.
You, and I think they're interested in these kind of details, and I think you need to reveal to them that you played in the high school band and what instrument you played.
I played a dweeby clarinet, okay?
And it was humble of you to acknowledge that.
It was humble of me to do it.
I agree, and I can only wish that I was able to be your friend in high school because I needed the example of someone humble like yourself. To me, participation in sports was really about expressions of pride and the cultivation of pride. And yet, I'm wanting it to be a different experience for my son. I want for my son, him to develop humility and servanthood among other biblical qualities and characteristics as he is playing.
Well, when we come back, we're going to talk about how that comes together with CJ and Chad, but also how it comes together in your own life, your pilgrimage, your Christian witness, and your parenting. The phone number is 877-893-8255. That's 877-893-TALK. We're talking about sports and the place that athleticism and formal athletic play, team sports, all of this should have in the life of the Christian. Just how important is all of this, and to what degree do we risk with our fanaticism letting the glory of God get eclipsed by something else? By the way, it's Alabama 74, Marquette 69. The phone number is 877-893-8255, 877-893-TALK. We'll be right back.
listening to the Albert Mohler Program, your place for intelligent Christian conversation about the issues that matter. To get online, call toll-free 1-877-893-TALK. That's 1-877-893-8255. Or go to www.albertmohler.com. Here again is your host, Dr. Albert Mohler.
Well, just slightly in control of this program, this is Albert Mohler welcoming you back with our special guest today, C.J. Mahaney, just one of my closest friends and one of the world's great experts on sports. Just ask me, I'll tell you that. And because he has motivated me in this area, and I don't think anybody could.
Al, you easily could have done better than me as a guest today. Here's what I want to know. How many possible guests turned you down before you came to my name today?
You were number one, CJ, because you're the guy that got me reading this stuff and got me, and you're the one who actually convinced me that all this is worth paying attention to. So thank you.
I am honored. So I am responsible for your new interest in sports.
Yes, and as if I'm not reading enough, you keep sending me more things to read.
Oh, so, I do indeed.
I appreciate it. Folks, the phone number is 877-893-8255. That's 877-893-TALK. We're talking about the place of sports in the life of a Christian. Let's go to Eloise, calling from Fremont, New Hampshire, listening on SM-170. Eloise, go right ahead. Eloise, you there? Okay, we lost her. Let's go to Mike, calling from St. Petersburg, Florida, listening on WTBN. Mike, your turn. All right, we're having some technical difficulty here, CJ. It's going to be the two of us here for just a minute. And I told you, by the way, in my blog, that I got a sport. Sudoku puzzles. All right. Well, it looks like we've had a complete catastrophic electronic failure here. Folks, just go ahead and call 877-893-8255. That's 877-893-TALK. This kind of thing happens from time to time. When you're dealing with satellites, you're talking about millions of miles of things to get potentially interrupted. We've got James calling. All right, folks, just keep calling. It's 877-893-8255. That's 877-893-TALK. Do we have CJ back on line one?
You do, yes. There
okay.
must be a more gentle way to phase me out of the show.
Yes, well, let me tell you, that's what you call panic on live national radio, CJ. We're glad to have you back. I was telling you that I've got a sport now. It's Sudoku. It's this puzzle. And I wrote an article about it just to convince you. It's not a sport?
No. Sports should require coordination, and I don't think any coordination is required for that.
Well, all I have to say, CJ, is that whatever coordination I didn't have before, I don't think I'm going to develop at age, well, somewhere
well, it's true.
Close to
you
50.
You have devoted yourselves to something much more important, so I'm grateful for that. I'm the beneficiary of that, so is all your listening audience.
Well, you, with your son Chad, are doing some very specific things to try to help him keep all of this in perspective. Can you kind of outline that for us?
Do my best. I am trying to prepare Chad. I'm trying to bring to his attention that the purpose of participation in sports is, as I mentioned earlier, growth in godliness and ultimately for the glory of God. Given the tendency of indwelling sin, I have a conversation with him prior to practice or prior to a game where I walk through with him just biblical priorities. Here is the biblical purpose for practice. Here is the biblical purpose for game. So I will talk to him about the importance of humbly receiving correction from his coach and asking his coach how he can grow in character as well as athletic skill. I want him to thank the coaches for the way they've served at the end of each practice and game. I want him to thank the referees after each game as well. I want him to encourage teammates for their display of godly character as they are playing, encourage them for their athletic skill as well. But the order of priority would be godly character first and athletic skill second. I want him to encourage his opponents during and after the game as well. So it can be as practical as if he knocks someone over. I want him to extend his hand. I want him to help them up. All of these practices are just a means of hopefully cultivating in Chad a heart of humility and servanthood before God.
Well, I think that intentionality just goes far beyond what most Christian parents honestly have ever thought about here. And that's why I really wanted you, CJ, to talk about this. And what you've written there at Together for the Gospel is, I think, really important. And I'm going to put up a link tonight, folks, at albertmohler.com. You can get right to CJ's articles there. And I think there are a lot of dads out there in particular. Let me just say, Dad, listen to what CJ's saying with your own son. Think about how you need to inculcate these disciplines in his life as a believer in order that he would glorify God in the midst of this. Again, it's just not enough to come to the end of the game, win or lose, and say, well, you know, may the best man win and to God be the glory. We're going to have to think about how to be Christian in the midst of it. Yes. Folks, the satellite's friendly to us again. The phone number, 877-893-8255. We got callers from all over the country. 877-893-TALK. My guest today is C.J. Mahaney, head of Sovereign Grace Ministries based in Gaithersburg, Maryland. An amazing movement of God. Church is spreading all throughout the country. And C.J. himself is a man who is both an athlete and a great preacher of the gospel. We'll be back with a conversation with C.J. Mahaney and with you, coast to coast. This is the Albert Mueller Program. You know, with all of this excitement, the big dance, March Madness, Final Four, all out there, with people skipping work, skipping school. Yes, I've had parents tell me that they've caught their kids skipping school to watch the tournament. With the gambling going on, the betting going on, and the fans that are happier than they ought to be when the team wins and sadder than they ought to be when the team loses. There's some fine line between being a fan and fanaticism. You know, C.J. Mahaney, I remember Martin Luther one time saying that he wished he could desire Christ the way his dog desires meat. And you know what he's talking about there.
Mm-hmm.
You know, do you get concerned when you see just how much intensity some Christians bring to their sports fanmanship?
Sure. I would want to monitor my own heart and monitor my son's heart as relates to passion for sports, because there certainly is the potential for it to become ultimately idolatrous. So I want to make sure that, first of all, I am an example to him of passion first and foremost for the Savior, and passion and commitment to the local church. And I want that to be where he views his dad as most passionate. Passion for the Savior, passion for my family, passion for the local church, passion for the advance of the gospel, not primarily passionate about participation in sports.
Well said. Let's go to Mark calling from Tampa, Florida, listening on WTBN. Mark, it's your turn. Okay, we're going to try this again. Mike calling from St. Petersburg, Florida. Mike, are you there?
Yes, I am.
Okay, God bless you for being there. We're having satellite difficulty, but the satellite likes you. Go right ahead, Mike.
Well, I totally agree with CJ. I, too, have a 13-year-old son who just finished his last year in youth football. But I have a question for both of you. What would you do, and this actually happened with my son, if one of his teammates was arrested for a second-degree felony and put in a juvenile detention center for a week, and also put on 21-day house arrest, but he was allowed to continue to play football? And not only was he allowed to continue to play, but he was put up in front of the team as the one of the leaders, you know, in the drills when they do the calisthenics before in the warm-up. He was put up as one of the leaders because obviously he was a good player. And I struggled immensely with pulling my son off the team. Should I pull him off the team? And this happened three-quarters of the way through the season. Should I pull him off the team and, in a sense, punish him for for the actions of someone else? Or should I keep him on the team, which I did?
Yeah, I think that's a great question. Mike, let's go to CJ. I'd love to know what you think about this.
Well, sadly, what Mike has described is really a demonstration of cultural priorities, culture celebrating athletic ability rather than character. So I would carry Mike's concern, and I think the wrong thing is being celebrated there. As for whether he should keep his son on the team, that is a great question, but I would like him to pursue his local pastor, because I think there are a number of details and related issues to that decision that a local pastor could address more effectively than I could.
Yeah, I think there's a lot of local knowledge needed there, Mike.
Right.
But I got to tell you, as a dad myself of a 13-year-old son, my heart goes right out to you, because you want him to learn how to be discerning and brave,
right,
and how to be a compassionate truth teller and how to stand for Christ. And, you know, this is very difficult. So I'd have to say, Mike, God bless you. And I'll go right back with CJ, where on this program we always go, and that is to the local church, where I would just encourage you to seek the counsel of wise men.
Yeah. And
think
I would
this
also
through.
Just say this is an opportunity for Mike to seize to transfer discernment to his son about that which is most important. He can humbly, not self-righteously, inform his son as to the priority of character as opposed to athletic ability.
And, of course, CJ, we see this, and we're talking about the Final Four, March Madness. You see this in college athletics where you see athletes get away with everything short of murder, and they're still playing. Some coach will play them somewhere. Even if they get kicked off one team, they can show up somewhere else. And, you know, we had that late hit at the end of the football season. You remember it was against a University of Louisville player. And that guy's going to go to the pros. And he said right up front, he said, I'm just going to go upstairs where that won't matter. But, you know, he'll still face a judgment for that in terms of his character. Let's go to Mark calling from Tampa. We got Mark back, WTVN. Go right ahead, Mark.
Hey, I just wanted to say I go to a big church here in Tampa, and it seems like people are so fixated with sports, some of the younger people, younger like in their 30s and 40s, that you would know if they were a Gator or a Seminole more than you would if they were a Christian. They put so much effort into it. I mean, they got satellite dishes, they got TiVo, they got all these different things. I mean, I just don't know how they would ever... Lord, with all this time they'd have to spend just to keep on up on the sports.
Yeah, you know, Mark, I am not a big sports fan, so I connect with that immediately because I run into people all the time who I know first and foremost by the shirt they're wearing for a team rather than for any other more important identity. CJ, are we crazy to have that concern?
No, I think that is a legitimate concern. I certainly think there is a place for cheering for, supporting a local college professional team. But again, one must monitor one's passion. And I want my passion to exclusively and entirely be devoted to the Savior, to my family, to serving in the local church, to the advance of the gospel. And I want there to be a clear distinction between my passion for those priorities and my passion for the Washington Redskins or Maryland basketball. And that difference should be obvious to my son as he observes the personal example, hopefully, that I'm setting in my life, as well as he observes me when I'm watching a game.
CJ, you're going to love the fact that someone you know in the Washington area called my staff and asked for an editorial change in my commentary so that when I mentioned Gene Williams, I had to say NCAA tournament winner Gene Williams.
You mean Gary Williams, right?
Well, see, that's how much trouble you're in here, CJ. Gary Williams. I mean your coach, University of Maryland.
Right. Yes, his name, and this would be very important. His name would be Gary, not Gene.
Well, I should have just stayed quiet. Folks, the phone number is 877-893-8255. We're going to go to Eloise calling from Fremont, New Hampshire. Eloise, go ahead and ask your question. Yes, go ahead, and we're going to come right back after the break with CJ's answer. Go right ahead.
Okay. I would just like to hear CJ's thoughts on club sports that organize their events to occur on Sundays. It's been a real issue for our family.
Yeah, and let me tell you, Eloise, one of the reasons why I wanted to get your question in is because we're getting lots of others who want to ask the same question. But you got to articulate it, and it was great to hear from you as you raised this with reference to your own son. But out there, CJ, you know, there are all kinds of teams that are playing on Sunday and all kinds of parents that I think are making decisions that really don't honor God and the gospel. We'll get CJ's response when we come right back. This is the Albert Mueller Program. Well, CJ, while I've got you, I'm going to get as much out of you as I can. Let's go to Eloise's question about these team sports on Sundays. How do you respond as a pastor to that?
Well, I would say that is a legitimate concern. And as a father, I think as fathers, we should model for our children passion for and commitment to the local church. I think we should transfer that passion for the local church, commitment to the local church, to our children, and we should not allow sports to compete with that passion or to replace that passion.
Well, I can't think of any way to be
about the priority of the local church would make a difference in any decision I made about my son and his participation in sports, not only Sunday, but throughout the week.
Yes, but it is a particular issue on Sunday. Because
it is an issue.
We see parents missing church services, taking their kids out of town for tournaments.
Unless there is some exceptional reason for that, I don't know how that could be justified from even a superficial study of Scripture on the priority of the local church.
Well, that's why I love you, CJ, because your first passion is for the church. And I want to say that. I know that you have passion for the University of Maryland that did not make the NCAA tournament this year.
That would be coached by Gary Williams.
Yes. By the way, Gene Williams is a college president. That tells you how my mind works. But
this is another story, occasion, because I think this might be the only time and topic where your guest does know more than you do.
Far, far more, CJ. Let's go to George calling from Tampa, Florida, listening on WTB. And George, go right ahead.
Hey, Albert, how are you?
I'm great, thanks.
I just wanted to offer up a real quick response in response to the parent that called in about what to do with his son who was on a football team that had made some bad choices. Had a similar experience. In this case, the coaches of my son's football team, which happened to be a Christian school, made some poor choices in an event that occurred after a football game at a restaurant where they were drinking and perhaps, you know, in my view anyways, participating in some activities that weren't really good and wholesome examples for the kids that were there. What we decided to do, and that's what I wanted to offer up, is after we prayed about it and sought counsel, what God told us to do was to not pull Christopher off that team and to use that as an opportunity to minister to those coaches.
George, I'm sorry, we're just about to run out of time. I want to thank you for that word. No, CJ, to what extent do athletic contests present an opportunity for Christian witness?
Oh, I think they present an ideal context for distinctives in godly character, and I think they are easily noticeable when on display, particularly in the form of humility and servanthood, to anybody watching, even if the person watching isn't theologically informed.
CJ, thank you so much for joining us. You're a dear friend. It's great to have you. And boy,
thank you. You didn't do the Final Four.
No, but I'll be back in control of this program tomorrow. Coast to coast. We'll see you then.
Thanks for listening, and be sure to visit our website, www.albertmoeller.com. You'll find archives of past shows and other important resources. You can also email your questions and comments. That's www.albertmoeller.com. Be sure to join us next time for the Albert Mohler Program, your place for intelligent Christian conversation about the issues that matter.